seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Well, hello. The first Golf Weekly of 2020. You are very welcome along. We have a few bits to get through. It's myself and Nathan Murphy today. Hello.
How are you?
Very well. This will be slightly abbreviated. Fionn Davenport is in Ashford Castle, if you've seen his social media.
Well, he looked at Rory McIlroy spending his new year there and thought, I want a bit of that.
That's how
I
roll.
It's good enough for Rory. Yeah. It's good enough for me.
He was dolled out, if you saw his Instagram, in some choice clothing.
Is that just what he wears now? Is that just his clothing?
I don't know. I think that's his Ashford Castle clothing, yes.
As a travel reviewer, he goes by the number of stars of the hotel he's staying in.
Correct.
He has five different styles of outfit.
He was dressed like a gentleman. People aren't too sure.
As we know.
Later on, we're going to bring the listeners a chat we had with Shane Ryan about the Patrick Reed situation, which is very grim if you're Patrick Reed. Obviously, I'm sure Golf Weekly listeners, friends of the pod, know he was heckled as he was putting on the third playoff hole at the Tournament of Champions. The word cheater rang out. There was an interesting conversation, briefly, brief tangent, when we were on air with Richie McCormack. I would say not a golf fan.
No. But I'm not quite sure if he dislikes the two of us more than golf or golf more than the two of us.
I definitely think we have turned him off golf to an extent. But I was explaining the situation because we did a piece with Shane Ryan on Off the Ball about what had happened to Reed, and Richie's reaction was, but so what? One person here or there, it's really not a big deal. Golf needs to get over itself. And I understood where he is coming from. But equally, if Patrick Reed, amidst silence and surrounded by 100 or 200 people at a green, is always at the back of his mind waiting. And it's for the word cheater as well, which obviously, it's not just like he's saying, you know, a generic, hey, douchebag. He's saying cheater. I do think that Reed will find this very difficult to cope with if it continues.
That part of it, I have different view in terms of actually mentally how he might cope with this whole being golf's most hated man thing, that he may relish it in some way.
Yeah.
But that part of it is sort of impossible to prepare yourself for. That, and it's like American, from what we see on television, PGA Tour events are quite jockish. So one person starts shouting mashed potato and somebody else wants to be a little bit louder. And that's got to be the concern for Reed, is that this becomes a mashed potato.
Yeah.
That every time he hits a drive, cheater!
Even he will struggle with that, surely. You're not so sure.
I'm just not so sure.
Yeah.
I just think there's something in him that's built a little bit different, that he's gone through his life, been his own guy, fighting against some imaginary force, and it brings the best out of him.
Well, he played well is the thing. I mean, at the Tournament of Champions, Patrick Reed, now admittedly he wasn't being heckled at this stage, but he did have the lowest round of the three players who made it into the playoff with a 66. So he is playing well. Jim McEnany at Golf Weekly OTV rather. Patrick Reed missing the putt in the first playoff hole to win, then messing up the second hole to lose. It's great to see, says Jim. I can't see much support going his way in 2020. It's now got to the... I am now, though, to a point at the post-Masters 2018 feeling whereby I am now saying, hang on, everyone. Let's not bully the man. Like, this just seems a lot. I don't think he quite deserves this. Obviously, look,
That is the one part where you find yourself a little bit conflicted. That there is a bullying element and everybody likes to jump on. There's also a side, a lot of people would feel he deserves absolutely everything he gets.
Where are you in this? Because I'm in the, I feel he's been now bullied. Oh my God, you think he deserves everything he gets? You're a monster.
I feel he's being bullied in the sense that, so clearly he's flawed. And if he cheats, as we know in golf, it's the worst possible thing you can do. But there are many, many, many flawed individuals in golf who are somehow allowed to present themselves as being stand-up guys.
They play the game.
You know, they make their very public charitable donations and things like that. Whereas that's not really... I just don't think he's the only bad guy out there.
Oh, he's clearly not.
He's clearly not the only bad guy out there. But it suits everybody, everybody in the PGA Tour, to have the one bad guy.
Yeah.
Look at us all over here, fine specimens of Republican voting men.
Yeah, Christians.
Yes, Christians. And then there's Patrick Reed, the bad guy.
Yeah. I don't like it, I must say. If he's routinely getting treatment like this, I think it will become quite uncomfortable, really. Len Dowling, by the way. I don't know, did you see this over Christmas? I didn't get a chance to yet. It's Ross Whitaker's documentary on Shane Lowry.
I finally
watched the Shane Lowry golf documentary last night. What a brilliant hour of TV. If anything, it was too short. It just goes to show that good guys can finish first at Golf Weekly OTB.
Yeah, enjoyable.
Was it a... Geez, I didn't know that about Shane Lowry thing.
No, it was... So there's obviously two different markets. There's the Golf Weekly market, I'd say, which watch it and go, oh, Shane Lowry, as we know, is a very nice guy and it's such a lovely story.
Yeah.
But we know all this. Like, we know that he won the Irish Open as an amateur. There's loads of really good bits with his family and with his mother and his father, which you never would have seen before, which is probably the more interesting stuff rather than actually him as an individual, because you'll have heard a lot of it through different interviews over the years and what happened in Carnoustie and what happened with Dermot Byrne and all that sort of stuff. But like, there's the part where his father is talking. I don't think it's about the Dermot Byrne split. I think it's actually when he misses the putt on 18 at the Irish Open as an amateur when he could have won it initially. And he just like has to leave the room in tears as, you know, you're watching your son do this. So there was, like, I came away from it going, no, that was nice. Christmas viewing. My wife is like in floods of tears. Oh my God. Okay. He's the nicest man.
So maybe pitch
his wife. Oh, when his wife is talking about how tough it was for him.
Pitch to that audience that don't know him as well. It was probably.
Yeah, because it was obviously also. So it was a post Open Championship documentary.
Mm.
So this wasn't. They had decided 18 months ago, let's follow him everywhere. It was, I would say, probably a month afterwards where it was, oh, you know, we should do a Christmas thing.
Yeah.
Shane Lowry documentary. So it's 5-6 people. You hear Bo talking quite a bit, which is good.
Say Bo comes out of this like a real hero.
Mm. Yeah, the relationship
timing,
actually.
Bo's timing has been very good.
Shane gives a lot of digs to Bo throughout it, really? And his constant talking and things like that. So it was, yeah, I thought it was a
worth a watch.
Worth a watch.
Okay.
But I think from a golf nerd point of view, you're not going to come away with. Which, listen, who wants that at on the 27th of December, 10 o'clock on RTE1?
I would have taken 5 minutes on like. His game. Like, I do think in these documentaries I'd love to, and it is purely for the golf nerd, but I would love, I grip it this way and I think this way, and when I try and curve the ball right to left or do it this way, this is how I play my game, this is what I do. And obviously you could spend 2 hours getting really good stuff with him, but you can edit it down to 4 or 5 minutes just to tick the box of the nerd.
Like, there's the bit of, and again, maybe so many documentaries are like this that we would watch of American sports where we're not quite sure of things and you're like, oh, I never knew that. So there's like, the Bridgestone Invitational, and one of the talking heads, whether it's his manager or caddy or someone, is explaining what the Bridgestone Invitational is.
Sure. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Because,
no, I can live with
in
that.
Fairness,
fine. Yeah.
It was probably one of the most watched programs on television.
Yeah.
Most people, actually, it turns out, don't know what the Bridgestone Invitational is.
I heard a lot of people at my golf club in Killeen, they were all saying very good things about it. They all really enjoyed it. So I think it went down well. Did they show much of his house? I'm just curious about these things.
No.
I think we need to do a Padraig Harrington-esque at the house.
At the house. Thing,
just to get a look at it, you know.
Yeah.
I just like seeing people's houses.
Yeah, we're,
Bannon,
we are.
All that kind of stuff.
We are quite nosy.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know if he'd let us in his house.
Well, he might. Ricky Joyce says he wants 25-plus Golf Weeklies in 2020.
Oh, well, here's one.
You've got this, lads.
Box ticked.
Is this a one or is this a half a one?
No, this is... Excuse me, this is a one.
Okay. And Ian Kane.
There's no half golf weekly.
Sent a picture from Dubai listening to the review of the decade. Hashtag friend of the pod. Feed up, enjoying life. So, a few different bits. Mention of Shane Lowry. This is not ideal. The Hong Kong Open was called off, you might remember, due to the protests in the city back towards the end of last year, back in November. So, 6 weeks on, the $1 million event has teed off today. Shane Lowry is there. He started off with a 69, so he's in the top 20, 4 shots off the lead. The issue for this tournament is that the only other player in the top 50 is Tony Finau. I did not recognise many names at this tournament. It's under-attended, to say the least. So,
well, the problem they have is that it is not a European Tour event.
Yeah, South Africa opens on in Johannesburg.
So it was initially co-sanctioned European Tour, Asian Tour, but because, you say, the South African Open is on, the European Tour had to say, well,
yeah,
tough luck, guys. I was surprised to see Lowry playing, actually. He was obviously over in, I think he was in Dubai or Abu Dhabi earlier in the week or last week, just after New Year, I saw him on Instagram flying off.
Okay.
And I thought maybe he was going to spend 2-3 weeks over there.
Like he did last time.
Preparing for the swing. But obviously now he's at a different plane and he has commitments that need to be honoured.
Well, next week is Abu Dhabi where he'll defend. Mm. It actually doesn't feel like... if you said to me how many times did Shane Larry win last season, I would say once, the Open.
Oh, Abu Dhabi. Because I finished on the Saturday morning, didn't it?
Yeah.
It did. I was finished at 1 o'clock just as we were coming on air, I remember. It feels like it's about 5 years ago.
It does, yeah. So he's the defending champion at the Abu Dhabi Championship next week. So he's in Hong Kong this week. Tournament of Champions. We should touch a little bit about this. Obviously, Patrick Reed will come to... The interesting thing about Justin Thomas, this is his 12th PGA Tour title. He has now passed Jordan Spieth. At one stage, Justin Thomas was 8-1 down in the Who's Won More Tournaments with his friend. And now he has overtaken him. If you didn't see this, Thomas was the one-shot leader with one hole to play and he hooked his second shot into all sorts of bother, ended up making a bogey, went into a playoff. So Thomas shot a 69 in the final round. Xander Schauffele, who was the leader going into the final round, had a 70. And Patrick Reed shot a brilliant 66. In the end, Thomas prevailed in the playoff against Reed ultimately, who missed on that playoff hole where he was called a cheater. I have a feeling this guy's back again in a big way. He's at the Sony this week, where obviously 3 years ago he went and he won the Tournament Champion, and then he won the Sony with a 59 in his opening round and finished that year with 5 wins, including a major. Thomas, again, looks like he's going to be a force. And we never talk about him that much. When we're talking Koepka, McIlroy, a little bit about Spieth and who actually, and obviously Tiger and various contenders to dominate a year, I'm never inclined to mention Justin Thomas. And there's no great reason for that, really.
No, and he's only 26.
Yeah.
Part of that was obviously the whole, he's Jordan Spieth's mate.
Yeah.
Which I think he still sort of lives with.
Yeah. Well, it was weird that I mentioned Jordan Spieth when I brought up... that's how I judge him. He's now overtaken him.
Yeah, and I saw a good chunk of Sunday and bits of Saturday, as I remind listeners at this time of year every year, nothing... If you want to know what effect kids have on your life, you won't be watching the Tournament of Champions anymore.
Well, that's sad news.
That is sad news. That was one of the first changes that was made. I remember it came around, because my first child was born at the end of January, so I had that year of staying up watching Tournament of Champions.
Nursing your child. I would have thought it's ideal.
Child wasn't born yet.
But I would have thought your newborn is made for it, no?
He was about a year then by the time Tournament of Champions came around again. I'm like, I can't stay up past 11:30. This would be an outrageous thing to even consider.
Because you need your sleep.
I need my sleep. So I'm like, got to go to bed and I'll watch the highlights. So, yeah. Prepare yourself for that eventually, Joe.
I'm not looking forward to that.
So, yeah, Tournament Champions, Sony Open, these things are unfortunately, time difference is going to kill you. Why don't we appreciate Justin Thomas? Is he, just not that interesting?
I don't find his play that interesting.
He's never had a moment. I can't think of any real Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
Like, Spieth, as well as winning the majors. Like, there's so many brilliant regular PGA Tour events, like the holding out from the bunker, holding these massive birdie putts in 18.
Yeah.
Like, he had a star quality that special things happened when he was in contention. Yeah. Whereas Justin Thomas is more, probably the more common golfer coming out of college now, who just goes and wins lots of money and wins lots of tournaments.
Yes. I can't think of a moment. I mean, even his PGA win, he lapped the field. Mm. He won comfortably. There was no drama or jeopardy or anything memorable about his back nine when he won the PGA, his first major. I mean, his dad was there, and that's kind of nice, and his granddad was there. I remember that. But yeah, I don't find him overly interesting to watch. I never turn on the TV, see Justin Thomas playing golf, and think, okay, let's see how he gets on.
Mm.
Let's see what happens here, because you know he'll...
Like, I'm struggling to think of him collapsing in tournaments.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to think of something that makes him stand out.
Yeah. And yet...
Aside from winning all the time.
12 wins. 12 wins is serious.
Mm.
26 years of age. Like, the piece I was reading on, I think it was Golf Digest, was now making the argument, like, 3 years ago, this guy won 5 times, including a major. If you're talking about player of the decade, then 26-year-old Justin Thomas has a real chance, they reckon, to be the player of the decade for the 20s. This will be bad news if this
happens. Oh, for the 20s, sorry. Yeah. I thought you were saying for
like, he's primed. At 26 years of age, a major already, 12 wins. Yeah.
He definitely seems like the type of player who could still be winning majors in 10 years, or contending, just... Very good, nice,
solid young game. Man.
And has come from that professional golfing background with his father and with his grandfather that, you know, should have a swing that is sustainable. Whereas Spieth obviously has sort of been on a bit of a roller coaster. But it is that I think you can underestimate the importance of those regular PGA Tour events, of doing special things in them that McIlroy has done through the years. Like McIlroy, even his first PGA Tour win at Quail Hollow, like the welcome to the big time, 62 in the final round, everyone goes, whoa. Justin Thomas just sort of goes and keeps winning.
I do remember his 59 3 years ago at the Sony, and everybody saying, this guy just won the week before and now 59. It's just, that's still my strongest memory of him. We're being a bit down and unfair on Justin Thomas.
Very, very much so.
Playoff hole.
When there's nothing to dislike about Justin Thomas at all.
Seems like a thoroughly decent fella. Meanwhile, James Corrigan has this piece, and this is kind of, so President Trump obviously has been busy this week, and when was it? I'm trying to keep track of the world right now because it's moving quickly. So Iran launched more than a dozen missiles at air bases in Iraq, housing US troops this week. Obviously that was a retaliation for the Soleimani murder or killing. It seems that quite a few US golfers are worried about the European Tour's desert swing. Now, nobody has pulled out yet, so I don't know really to what extent this is serious. Like Sergio Garcia, who said, for instance, if I feel it safe, I will be there. He said to Golf Week and Wednesday, I'm gathering information. Brooks Koepka is due to play. Patrick Cantlay is due to play. Really, the only player who's spoken out too much about it is Bryson DeChambeau. He has said, I seriously may not be going to Abu Dhabi. All this talk, no Americans able to go over to that area. Insane, brother. Protecting the country, though, I love it. You gotta love it. These are real quotes.
Was that an interview or was that him playing a video game? Because I saw, and I meant to go back and watch it, he was so live streaming playing some video game.
Okay.
And was obviously talking to people while he was doing it.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, was it kind of a relaxed...
It makes more sense. It's just not an interview answer. That makes a lot more sense. Okay, that's fine.
So when you're a professional golfer and you're weighing up the pros and cons and the risks... How much does your appearance fee need to be, and how close to war do we need to be before you go or stay at home?
I would think your fee needs to be to stay at home.
So if you're getting $2.5 million, are you going no matter what?
No. I mean, I am. Sorry.
Yeah.
Me and you are. I don't think these lads are. I guess at this stage as well, this was such a, it seemed, quickly escalating situation. There's been a touch of coolant.
Calmed down a bit now.
Touch of coolant put on, and obviously we discussed the royal family at length, which seems to have overtaken things in the news. But I think it's still quite a serious situation out there. So I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see how it plays out. I guess they're all doing the same thing. But,
yeah. I don't know. Part of me would be thinking, terrible thing to say, that if I'm an American golfer, I'm thinking, I am close to this area, and if you are the enemy, as the Americans will see it, and you're looking for a prime target...
Yeah.
That will get a lot of attention. A
lot of attention. It would cross your mind. Sergio Garcia is also waiting to see what happens as well. Who, by the way, turns 40 today.
Oh, wow.
I'm like amazed that the kid is 40. And equally, he has been around literally forever. So, I mean, that's still quite young. We've got another 10 years of Sergio at least.
Yeah. I just sort of feel now that you've said he's turned 40, like in 6 months' time, something will happen. We'll be going, and this guy is now 40 and he's still making these mistakes.
So we're
going to put up one of those tweets, one of those New Year tweets, and you know how things have changed over the last decade. And he did the whole, you know, my top three highlights of the decade: getting married, having a child, and in third place, winning the Masters. Which, Sergio, nobody's believing. You're not fooling anybody.
We have Shane Ryan coming up. So I just wonder, but this was on Mondays, Tuesdays off the ball. Tuesdays off the ball. I do suspect, by the way, I know we all got very heated in this and Shane Ryan's really good and everything. I do suspect actually this will calm down around Reed. I never quite said that, but I do think this will calm down a good bit. And this may happen a handful of times between now and the end of the season. New York, US Open, maybe the players, Florida, there's a lot of drinking there, and if he goes to Phoenix. But I think in the
if he goes to Phoenix, say I'll have a newfound respect for him, be putting it mildly.
Yeah.
I just think, like, I want to see him go to Phoenix 16th and do the whole...
Dig sand.
Dig sand.
Yeah.
Turn up in 16 with a giant shovel.
Yeah.
And two fingers to the entire world.
Yeah.
It is... the worst possible thing that can happen, though, in a way. Like, I do think mentally he'll be all right. But, it's just saying, if somebody shouts just at the wrong time. Mm. There's nothing you can do for that.
No, and it's a moment of infamy, and it's remembered, and it's a terrible thing to have.
And it's incredibly off-putting.
Yeah, I would have thought so. So
if that gets into your head that, is this going to happen? Do I need to prepare myself that this might happen?
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're anticipating the silence being broken at every turn, incredibly difficult then. So we'll see how it goes. So Shane Ryan joined us on Tuesday to discuss this. This was fresh after Reed had been abused at the Tournament of Champions. So we'll give you a sense of what Shane Ryan made of the whole thing. Obviously, we got Shane Ryan on because he's written the book, Slaying the Tiger, and a big part of that was Patrick Reed and his college years. So he had a good sense of Reed and how he might handle this. So here's Shane Ryan. So we have Shane Ryan with us, who's a regular guest on Golf Weekly. He's author of the New York Times bestseller, Slaying the Tiger. You're there, Shane. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, guys? I'm here.
Good. Great to have you with us. So we wanted to talk to you about Patrick Reed, Masters champion, a player you've profiled, not least in your book, and done some digging on his college days. And all of that kind of came up around the time he won the Masters as well. I think it came to wider public attention that Reed has had a difficult past and is probably an unusual person in some respects and not the most popular man on tour. And that was talked about at length in his family situation when he won the Masters. Since then, it's probably died down a touch. I mean, Reed hasn't been tearing things up massively in his career. He hasn't won massive tournaments and he stayed out of trouble until the end of last year, the cheating incident. He says there was no intent. Effectively, and people might have seen even on Twitter, the slow motion replays, he moved sand twice in a sanded area. I don't think it was strictly a bunker, but he improved his lie, effectively, would be the crime, and he did it twice. And it was very, very blatant. I mean, you could see the sand being moved. He said there was no intent. That was probably his first mistake in his handling of this latest episode.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a lot of people knowing his history and just seeing the strangeness of the way he put the club directly behind the ball before sweeping backward. You mentioned it's a waste area, so you can ground your club. So that wasn't illegal, but you certainly can't move sand that's kind of inconveniently in front of your ball. It seemed like there was intent. If you're asking what I believe, I definitely think he cheated on purpose. Not everybody agrees with that, but that's my belief. I think the big thing that you pointed out is there was absolutely no accountability from him or from anyone else. And what was really interesting was the President's Cup happened just the next week. And so it was a really weird timing situation where his teammates in the President's Cup all of a sudden had to broadcast this solidarity with him or choose to call him out. But they all kind of towed the line and were on message. So it was a weird situation where even his fellow players on the American side, there was no accountability from them. Nobody in power was saying exactly what this was. And I think that was really frustrating for people, for fans. And we saw the way the Australian fans blew up at him and were heckling him pretty mercilessly all 4 days that he was playing President's Cup. And then at the Sony tournament that just ended, he made the playoff and was against Justin Thomas. And after a very important putt, somebody in the crowd there screamed cheater at him. And they picked it up on TV. It was very, very blatant and obvious. And a lot of people have been making the comment that that's supposed to be one of the most laid back galleries of the year in Hawaii. So, you know, if they're giving him stick, it's, you know, what's going to happen in New York for the US Open and, you know, what's going to happen the rest of the year. And he would have gotten it no matter what, the heckling. But I think, the lack of accountability makes people kind of double down.
I mean, the President's Cup, obviously it's a team event and it's adversarial by nature. So it was almost expected that he would get some abuse from the crowd. And that's kind of fine because that is the nature of the atmosphere at that event. And it was at that Reed, when he was getting a huge amount of stick at one green, he started to pretend to dig sand. And interestingly, actually, the PGA Tour of all people retweeted this as if they thought this was brilliant and hilarious. And, you know, I guess got to get those clicks. So they were all over that. But I must say, I thought the year would be parked and he would come out, and especially in Hawaii of all places. I just thought this kind of thing would drift away into the forgotten past. You know, we live in a very instant society now, and how many news cycles is it since Patrick Reed cheated? I just thought it would sort of be forgotten. So for it to happen at that moment, I mean, we're talking about a sport where there is complete silence at a moment where he's making this crucial putt. There's how many people around the green? It's a very small area. And when, well, actually, I'll play the audio. People can sort of hear it. But I was just surprised that it's taken this turn for Reed, and that you do wonder what the season holds for him now. Here's the moment where, again, this isn't a playoff hole. This is a big moment. Everybody's been ultra quiet, and then the cheater call comes out. And it's funny, a colleague of ours who doesn't like golf, we were chatting about this at the top of the show, and he was saying, well, what's the big deal? People get abused like this all the time in pretty much every sport. But in golf, the silence when players are taking a shot is paramount. And if Patrick Reed is going to spend a season or two or even a few months waiting for that silence to be broken with a scream of cheater, which is audible to absolutely everybody, this will become a serious enough situation for him.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the way tension can escalate. There's this talking point that a lot of people like to regurgitate that, oh, Patrick Reed loves adversity, and he thrives when people are hating him. But even just 4 days in Australia, by the end of the third day, it had gotten so bad that his caddy jumped out of a cart and confronted a fan, and there was going to be an altercation. Originally, people were reporting that he punched him. His story was that he shoved him. Who knows exactly what happened, but... yeah, it just shows you this thing is not easy to handle for anybody, even if you think you're somebody who loves adversity or whatever. So, yeah, if he has to deal with this, as I think he will, for a period of months and maybe even this entire year, maybe beyond, that's going to take its toll. Absolutely. It's not going to be fun. You would think a normal human being would start to dread being out on the course and in front of these galleries just because it's either you're taking abuse or, even worse, you're waiting to take abuse.
Shane, in your book Slaying the Tiger, when you spent that year on the PGA Tour and going to event after event and getting to know the players and maybe the way the players interact with each other, the players' response to this, and maybe the fact it was the President's Cup the week after, diffused it somewhat, that they either had to back him or speak out, and it seems they backed him. Justin Thomas made one or two jokes. I think at one stage he was in a bunker and a practice round and asked Patrick Reed what he thought he should do as he was sort of clearing the bunker out to give himself a nicer lie. It was all quite jovial and a bit of a laugh. But your sense, having been on tour in those Tuesday, Wednesday practice rounds when players are talking and bitching away, are they looking at Patrick Reed and ostracising him completely? Or is this, look, these things happen. We're the PGA Tour. We all stick together. We all just keep our heads down.
Yeah, I think I don't know if you can ostracize him further. I think he was already kind of an unpopular figure, and he isolates himself to some degree. He's not exactly going out and seeking friendship or camaraderie or even a practice round with his colleagues. But yeah, I think look, we saw from the international team, Cam Smith basically called him a cheater. We've seen some older golfers like Chris DeMarco kind of sound off on Twitter. You're just starting to see the front of the wave in a lot of ways. If it hadn't been the President's Cup, I think you would have seen more. I think as time goes on, you're going to learn more about what their real reactions were. And there's no way they like this. I mean, golf is a sport where, you know, not cheating is a critical part of it because so much time is spent on your own. And you know, the integrity of the game is enforced somewhat by the players themselves, which makes it unique among professional sports in that regard. And so, yeah, it's a big deal that he cheated and people aren't going to respect it. You know, if you cheat to shave off a stroke, you're stealing money from the people you're playing against. You know, this is a zero-sum game out there. So I don't think they liked Reed to begin with. I think they're going to like him even less now. So, yeah, he's not going to be anybody's best friend. And you'll start to see more and more criticism, I think, come out from players.
Without wanting to defend Patrick Reed, because I think most people feel that he did cheat here and he should have been punished properly, and like we've spoken about this on Golf Weekly, that if he was playing on the European Tour, there's a definite sense that he would have received a pretty stern warning at the very least, that it would have been made public. But from his point of view, like, he's not the only player who's cheated. He's the one who had the slow-mo camera on him inside the bunker. There must be countless other cases where players get away with it. You even think back to the different attitudes of somebody like Phil Mickelson at the 2018 US Open, where he hits a moving ball and sort of laughs about it, and this is all part of his unique zany personality, that it's very easy to pile on Patrick Reed and everybody's just looking for any excuse to do it.
Well, I think first thing I would say is that he has a history of it. And, you know, they came out with a video immediately from 2015 that showed him doing the same thing at the Hero. So there's that. It's someone who, in people's minds, is a repeat offender. The Mickelson thing, I don't really hold that as a good comparison because he was clearly doing something that was a form of protest against the greens at the USTA. He wasn't trying to get one over on anybody. He was essentially saying, penalize me. I'm making a point here and I'm frustrated. I don't like the move, but I do distinguish it from what Reed did. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, you can take the argument that, hey, other people have cheated in the past, so it's okay. And I know that's not what you're saying. But I just, yeah, to me, that's not convincing. I mean, I don't think there are that many examples of cheating. Every year we have examples of people calling penalties on themselves that nobody else saw, sometimes after the fact, sometimes in a way that costs them a great deal. So, yeah, I think, you know, Patrick Reed, he's got to be accountable for this. And he wasn't, either by himself or the governing bodies or his fellow players to a large extent. Nobody called him out. And that's fine, but it's going to infuriate fans and other golfers more. And it's just going to make matters worse for him, in my opinion.
Mm. Has golf ever had a bad boy to the extent of Reed, as in somebody who turned up tournament after tournament, was abused over something as serious as cheating, and just kind of took on that persona, which is what Reed is facing here across this year?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody's really come close. Yeah. I mean, look, Patrick Reed has had a really complicated past. I don't think I've ever seen a reaction to somebody winning a big tournament like the Masters, like we saw his reaction. The immediate story in the aftermath became about his parents and his past and, hey, why don't people like Patrick Reed at a time when, by all rights, you know, he should be being celebrated as somebody who just, you know, earned himself some golf immortality. No, I just don't think there's an analog, period. I can't even begin to think of anybody who would come close. I think already, you know, he's not yet 30 and he's already kind of set the mark for golf villains.
You can give people a sense of his personality because you talked about him at length in your book, Slaying the Tiger, and you got a sense of him. Because I'm looking at him now and I'm wondering, has this got serious enough or will this get serious enough where he needs to redeem his reputation? Even if cynically behind it all, he doesn't give a damn and thinks this is all nonsense, but that the effect of this will just become too much and he'll have to sit down and do an interview with the Golf Channel somewhere and put on a sad face and talk about, you know, his struggles and how he wants to do better and he's sorry. Has he, you know, in so much as you know, do you think that's likely or will this guy just tough this out and say, screw everyone?
Yeah, that's one of the central conflicts, I think, of Patrick Reed's psychology and his personality and that of his team is that they refuse to give an inch at any point, even when they're clearly in the wrong. And sometimes when it doesn't seem like they're in the wrong. For example, you know, his parents have gone around and courted media appearances and showed up and, you know, he's abandoned. His parents and he have been separated for a number of years for reasons that nobody's sure about, but he has never really made a public statement about why that happened, about why he left, and he's let them completely seize control of the story, which is, to me, a very weird thing for parents to do. But point being, he just doesn't give in to this popular perception, which I think is a true perception, that, you know, by showing a little humanity publicly, even if you said, as you said, even if it's like cynical, do it. Or in just in a very basic way, you know, after you get caught red-handed, admit what you did. And I just think the constant stubbornness, the constant refusal to engage in any way with the media or with fans, again, isolates him, hides his true personality, whatever that personality may be, from people, and makes it easier and easier for people to just cast him as this enemy. And look, everything he does just kind of adds to this public story that he has no part of. He has no control over it.
If there's one good thing to come out of this, maybe it's that the PGA Tour are a little bit embarrassed about everything that's happening. Because we talk about it being a self-policing sport. There's also rules. And he cheated. Clearly, live on television. Yeah. And the PGA Tour decided not to do anything. Now, was it because it was a week away from a President's Cup where he's going to be wearing the colours, he's going to be representing the PGA Tour, and they didn't want this scandal about a player probably having to be stripped of his place in the team? And as you say, hoping that this would all blow over the space of a couple of weeks. Whereas this now, you feel, is going to be a talking point. I don't know if he'll play in Phoenix this year, but anybody who knows the Phoenix Open, where they have 100,000 people at the 16th hole, and it's pretty rough and rowdy at the best of times, if Patrick Reed goes there, God help him. Yeah. It's going to be a big story.
Well, the PGA Tour's behaviour, I know, I don't know who retweeted or put up the clip of Reed pretending to dig sand in Australia, but to say that was ill-judged for the PGA Tour of all people to be doing that is an understatement. So, like, they've come out of this, you know, they've had leniency on a lot of issues with various players, often hand-picked players down the years. But, I mean, for them to be involving themselves in the defense of Patrick Reed was just bizarre. I couldn't understand what they were thinking.
Yeah, it was really strange. But I think it's part institutional. I think when you commit yourself to a PR tactic that all your players are gentlemen and scholars and, you know, there's so much dignity and integrity, I think really when something comes out that violates that, your hands are almost tied, and you don't, not only do you not know how to respond, but you don't have the mechanisms to respond. And the PGA Tour in a lot of ways is an unbelievably impressive organization. They run things very efficiently. You know, they're head and shoulders above other governing bodies in golf. And it puts me in an awkward position almost to criticize them, because there are a ton of people who work for the PGA Tour who help me out routinely on a, you know, anytime I'm there and have been integral to the work I do. Mm. But yeah, again, you do have to criticize when it's necessary. And I don't know that they exactly know how to handle it when something like this happens. They have no board that could decide to suspend for something like this. And really, all they can do is a two-shot penalty. And it just feels woefully inadequate. And, you know, you had Slugger White, the rules official, when they asked about Patrick Reed, said, I think the quote was, oh, he was unbelievable, you know, when he assessed him the penalty. And he said that in a positive way, like he was complimenting them on how he took it. And it's just this absurd situation that you go, what twilight zone are we living in? I mean, it's alienating in a way for people to see this and go, are they not seeing what I'm seeing? I mean, it's just a little strange that way. So yeah, I think they could improve in that regard for sure.
It is worth remembering that this comment on Sunday night came in a playoff.
It's a big moment, yeah.
But that under all this cloud, he's still performing. All right, it's a reduced field at the Tournament of Champions. There's only 30 or so players.
Yeah.
But it's still a quality field. He's going up against Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
And he's there in a playoff performing, which would suggest that maybe he is just wired differently than the rest of us. And whereas you feel that this pressure building throughout the year is going to have some sort of a negative effect, that maybe there's something in him that he can use this as, it's me against the world.
So then, to sum up what we could be on the precipice of, Shane, as we kind of round off this conversation, and this is the interesting thing for the sport, if you have a guy who's unusual enough in that he won't do the soft interview on Golf Channel to say, I'm so sorry, and to win back the affections of everybody, who actually, as Nathan said, can still perform to a really high level even in that atmosphere, and you have, as you do at most PGA Tour events, lots of drunken fans, we have maybe for the first time in golf, like a proper guy on tour who's going to take lots of abuse and be pilloried everywhere he goes. And it's going to introduce this new dimension.
Yeah, you know, it's a great, it's going to be an interesting question to see. My take, as I said before, I think it's inevitable that this breaks him down in some way. And I don't think it's a positive. You know, Australia, you know, he lost his first three matches before he went and won his singles match. And I thought that, and that plus Paris, I think it was indicative that, you know, this isn't always a good thing. We have this thing, you know, Michael Jordan in America was a guy who famously loved adversity, and he famously responded well to it. There have been other people, you know, someone like Derek Jeter, who have comments like, I love when an entire stadium is booing me, it fires me up. And I think we romanticize this narrative of the killer athlete who loves to, you know, like you said, wired differently and loves to perform when everybody's against him. But this is a very different animal from being roundly booed because you're on a different team. This is very personal. Golf is an individual sport, and you're talking about one guy walking in a gallery full of thousands of people taking abuse. Very strange situation, a very different situation. I feel that even someone like Patrick Reed, who's obviously an incredible talent and a tough guy, really good under pressure and very resilient, even him, I think it's going to break him down.
Okay, well, we'll see. Listen, a pleasure to have you on, as always, Shane. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you, guys.
There we are. That is Shane Ryan. So, I mean, he seems to think that it will actually break Reed if it continues, and if it was to gather pace, that nobody is immune to that kind of pressure.
How broken does he need to be before we get him in an oversized suit apologising to the world?
Well, I didn't think what will happen. So say, okay, so say it does reach a point over the next month where we all turn around and we say to each other, actually, this is kind of like bullying, you know. Then he won't actually have to apologise anymore. He'll just have to do the sit-down interview where he talks about the torment of being the victim of bullying and how horrible it's been and how it's really scarred him. You know, he won't actually have to he'll have suffered enough, and I don't think he'll actually have to apologise. Because I don't think he ever is going to apologise. And he can't actually now ever say...
No, you know what, I was...
I did actually mean it, yeah. Of course I meant it.
I just had a brain fart, and I don't know what came over me, and I just thought I'd get away with it, and I wasn't thinking...
Yeah, he can't ever say, I knew I did it, and obviously it was intentional.
I'm a flawed individual.
Yeah. No, I think if it comes to it, if, you know, Shane Ryan's worries for him come to fruition, I think he'll do a sit-down interview where he talks about how this is horrible. Why does everyone hate me? And suddenly everyone's going to feel terrible. You won't.
Unless the interviewer goes, well, here's the long list.
Yeah. So we'll see. Interesting couple of weeks coming up. We've got the Desert Swing kicking off. Hopefully everything stays okay in that part of the world. Mm. And Bryson and the lads are all there. And then, well, Masters is how many weeks away, Nathan?
I just got in my head that Bryson will turn up in military gear.
Keogh in 91 style.
USA, USA.
What did he say again? Insane, brother. Protecting the country, though, you gotta love it.
You gotta love it.
You gotta love it, protecting the country. I'm gonna let you go. You're busy. You're
so busy.
Got a busy show today. We're back next week. We will drag Peter Laurie and Fionn together, and yourself, hopefully, and we'll get stuck into the desert period. Tiger, is he playing much across the desert?
Tiger, actually, just before I came in, I saw tweeting that he is going to play... Excited for the season to begin at Farmers Insurance Open. So he's going to play Torrey Pines. No great surprise there.
Yeah.
Where he's won, what, 8 times? Mm. And he's also going to play the Genesis Invitational, which is at Riviera.
Lovely.
So that is the Valentine's weekend is Genesis. And I think Farmers is the first weekend of February.
Okay. I can live with that. All righty. We will talk to you next week.
Starter kid right here.